This is the December 9 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Greg Ginder. He's at lakefrontfutures.com out of Hopkinsville, Kentucky. Greg Johnson is with us from TGM. That's totalgrainmarketing.com. They picked up the Anderson's facility here in Champaign, Illinois. Eventually, Greg, I'll stop saying that, but I think it's worth continuing to talk about for the moment. And Chuck Shelby is with us, too, from Risk Management Commodities. That's rmcommodities.com online. He is in Lafayette, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to our programs anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. We just refreshed the website, so it's probably worth a trip there to take a quick look if you haven't dropped by for a while. Let's start by getting a list of items we might want to take up. I think Greg Ginder will start with you. WASDE, I'm sure, is on the list, though I'm not sure that it had much of an impact today. What else is there?
One of the interesting things that I've found here over the last few weeks or months is the export inspections and the amount of grain that's been moving up and down the river. So I find that to be very interesting.
Greg Johnson from TGM.
I've got two things. One, the South American weather. We know they planted more bean acres down there. They're off to a good start, but now all of a sudden southern Brazil is a little on the dry side. So how much of an impact will that have as we continue forward? And then number two, when are these farmers going to start selling corn? Do they ever need to sell corn? Are they so financially well off that they don't even have to sell this old crop corn? Basis continues to be extremely firm, indicating that farmers are extremely tight holders. When will that change, or will it?
And Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities on your list.
Well, I think talking about corn and inputs and where those acres are going to fall as we move into 22, and ethanol is a bright spot that we've seen in the last several months here.
I would like to come back, Greg Ginder, to you at Lakefront Futures. You mentioned export inspections and river traffic. It's been a while since you've been on our program. If I remember correctly, you worked along the river at one of the terminals in St. Louis. Can you tell me about some of your background, please?
Sure. Yeah, I worked at the ADM facility on the Missouri side of St. Louis, and we basically watched basically the river traffic, try to get a better feel for how the basis is going to affect farmers, not only on the river and on the interior, barge freight, you know, anything, any interruptions along the river. Hurricane Ida definitely had a role to play this harvest and beyond, and we're still kind of feeling the effects of that.
Well, tell me a little bit about river traffic that you've seen over the past month and a half or so in that case.
Well, as far as the actual traffic itself, it's been fairly normal. But one of the things that we're seeing in the export inspections area is there's a definite lag on total exports in corn and beans that's left over from Hurricane Ida. They just had so much damage down there that they're putting it back together, and they're getting along just fine now. But for that 2 or 3 week spell that we had there, we're somewhere in the neighborhood of 6 million tons behind on soybeans overall, and close to 2 million on corn. So it's definitely been interesting to watch. I thought by now we would have chipped away on some of that, but it seems like we are just kind of holding that bubble. And I'm waiting to see when we start chipping away at it, because if we continue this pace, there could be some change in the usage category for both corn and beans. We saw the wheat change today on the USDA numbers. It wasn't much. It was a total of maybe 20 million bushels, and I think they decreased imports by 5. So it was a net change of 15 million put back into the stocks. So my concern or my worry is that something could similarly happen in corn and beans.
Chuck, you just listened to that comment and probably are thinking about Ida, and many people thought that would be a soybean issue. I'm wondering if the higher price of both corn and soybeans may have caused some demand destruction that is delaying even further or eliminating some of the export market. Have you thought much about that, or do you see anything that would tell you that might be the case?
Well, this was an interesting 5 or 6 days, that as every day we saw some unexpected bean sales. We hadn't seen 6 days in a row for a long time. Then we saw Mexico come in 2 days ago for a huge amount of corn. So it looks like to me that world buyers are starting to stick their toe in the water here and start to, you know, make up for some lost ground. And you go back to the point, we couldn't really ship it for a while. So it seems like this week, the past week or so, we really picked up on exports, which is really good to see.
And then can you talk a little bit about ethanol as a usage category as well, since we're on the fundamentals?
Well, that was a shining star, I guess, to see the ethanol production really come back around and get back to a point for pre-pandemic. It looks like that's going to continue. And then we talked about the RF mandates here. And I don't think much about 21 or 20, but I think going forward, I think there's some positives there that were announced this week. And hopefully we won't allow waivers, and that will really help our production of ethanol and be a boost to the corn price as we move into 22.
And Greg Johnson at TGM's facility, how is the rail market going to the livestock in the Southeast?
They're having to pay up. Normally they've got the market to themselves this time of year, but with exports at a relatively robust pace, the feeders are having to compete with the export market. And so we're seeing extremely strong basis levels, more so on corn and beans, but the bean basis level is firm as well. But the corn basis is just on fire. I think there's corn out there. It just isn't moving. Farmers are, I think, well off. They're waiting for $6 corn, and they don't need to pay bills yet. So they've been extremely tight holders, and the end users are stepping up to the plate a little bit to get some coverage on. So I think it's just kind of an order flow type of thing at this point, more buyers than sellers for the time being.
I want to double check with each of you one quick item on the export market as it relates to both corn and soybeans, because those are the marginal price bushels, meaning they're the ones that are going out of the country, and they are usually the highest price bushels, generally speaking. Are exports as a fundamental in good condition, in your opinion, at this point? Not what we did this week, but just where we are in total for the marketing year. And Greg Ginder, I'll let you start.
One of the things that I've been tracking also is the phase one agreement with the Chinese. One of the interesting factors in it is the agriculture section that we have actually been on a pretty good pace almost. Now that they rank these in dollars, so it's not necessarily in bushels, but as a component of dollars, they're somewhere in 90% range on the purchases. So that gives me a little bit of a good feeling. I mean, it definitely is lagging behind in the manufactured goods and the energy sectors. But as far as demand goes, I would say once we get down to about $12 on soybeans, you see that the Chinese come in, unknown destinations come in. So anywhere between 12 and 12.50 on a soybean is a pretty good target for some demand.
Greg Johnson, how do you see the full marketing year for exports?
I see corn running at pace or above pace. I know we're a little bit behind right now, but that's just compared to last year. If you look at compared to the last several years, corn exports are really in pretty good shape. Soybeans are a big wild card. You know, as Greg said, you know, will China continue to come in when we get down to $12 like they have in the past? If so, that soybean export pace can pick right back up again. But right now, I guess I would feel more confident saying that the corn export number is going to meet or exceed expectations. I feel more confident about that number.
Yeah, and your expectations, Chuck?
Well, I think going forward, it was mentioned earlier about South America. So I think the world's closely watching that, especially China. If we start to see some problems continue to develop in the South American and Argentina, southern Brazil, then I think exports will probably pick up at a pretty rapid pace if that weather deteriorates.
How do you see corn inputs for the 2022 crop year and what it does for the marketplace related to the corn-soybean battle and potentially old crop corn prices, I suppose, as well?
Well, it's one of the most confusing times I've ever seen, and I've been doing this a long time. There's more farmers that haven't been able to source nitrogen or are willing to pay some of these prices that are out there. I think really going forward it's going to have a major impact, because I know in some of the budgets out there that U of I put out, it still kind of pencils out for corn. But I think we have to divide out the three I states against the western states. And another big factor to producers is you can get by without putting fertilizer on your soybean crop if you had to, or kind of live off what you had. Maybe you've got it built up enough. So to me, that's another factor that in the long run, I'm 90 million acres or less on corn going forward, simply because other crops are so high priced and the difficulty of sourcing nitrogen and difficulty in going through your budget and looking at the high price of P and K when you can plant crops that don't require so much. So going forward, I think the March 31st report is going to be a really big report. That could be a catalyst there if acres come in where I think they're going to be, to make old crop corn even more valuable as we move into the spring planting season.
And because you mentioned the University of Illinois forecasts, those were made during the Illinois Farm Economic Summits, which are ongoing. The first one, and I emceed these events, took a look at price and forecast outlook for corn and soybeans. Joe Jansen, Scott Irwin, agricultural economist on the U of I campus, pegged the 2022 plantings for acreage for corn at 96 million. That would be a very, very large number, with a cash price of $4.25 for the year. That would be for the next marketing year, the harvest next fall. Soybeans at $11 with an 85.5 million acre planting. And they also put out a number which was fairly different, actually a lot different than what USDA's $5.45 season's average cash price that they updated again today, same price from the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate for the crop that was harvested, corn crop that was harvested in this fall. They put a $4.85 number on that, Greg Johnson, which brings me back to the idea that farmers are holding on really tight to corn, and that there could be a wall of corn that is delivered at some point into the marketplace. And I'm wondering what that might do, if anything, to price.
Well, I think you're right. I think there is a wall of corn out there. But when does it come to the market, and will it be met or offset with an equal amount of demand, especially from the export side? I think farmers are tight holders of old crop corn. They don't know what their input costs are going to be in a lot of areas. And until they know those numbers, I think they're holding on to old crop corn as kind of a proxy for what their input costs are going to be. If inputs keep going up, they figure the price of old crop corn will keep going up. So I think that's one reason why we're not seeing very much old crop corn move. And as far as acres are concerned, I think here in Illinois, central Illinois, we're going to stick pretty much to our rotation. I don't see a big shift to bean acres here. Where I do think we could see in bean acres to bean acres would be in the peripheral states, the Dakotas, southern states, you know, maybe far out west, where they can't grow, you know, the 240 bushel corn. It's easier to justify the higher input costs if you can spread it out over 240 bushels an acre. If you can only grow 160 bushels an acre like they do in the Dakotas, it's a little bit harder to justify those higher input costs. So it will be interesting to see, you know, where those acres shift if these input prices stay as high as they are right now.
So you brought up an interesting thought, and I want to know what each of you believe about this idea. Are farmers holding corn as a hedge against input prices for next year? Is that something they should do? Greg Ginder.
Well, I can't really blame them for being a little lethargic on selling old crop. I mean, they have plenty of reasons to do it. I mean, the input cost, I'm sure cash rents are going up. There's a lot of talk about inflation, whether it's real or just perceived. I mean, it's really difficult for me to look at this market and tell people, you know, to sell into it. But at the same time, you look at these prices, there's a lot of profitability in it. And from a discipline standpoint, they should probably be looking into the new year of making some sales.
Well, harvest has just ended, and especially in the eastern corn belt with the down corn and some of the wet conditions we had. So typically, I think a lot of farmers are just kind of exhausted from harvest, and they're not really interested in just, hey, just filled the bin, now do you want me to just take it out? So I think there's just kind of an attitude of worn out from harvest and for all some of the other reasons that were listed. But one thing as a producer that's just, you know, sticker shock on our side of the equation, when you look at everything we're buying, you look at, you know, rents going up, you look at a piece of machinery going up, you look at fuel prices being higher, you look at everything we buy is going higher. So I think farmers, producers are just sitting back trying to absorb all this information and trying to come up with a game plan. So if you wanted to sell some, I don't think it's a bad idea, but I think there's probably some reasons to go out there and look for some reownership further on down the road and kind of offset your risk at a known cost.
Greg Johnson, on Thursday afternoon, what was spot corn basis?
We were 2 cents under the March futures.
And my local elevator was 4 cents under. And what would you normally be under in under normal conditions? 25?
No, probably 10. It's post-harvest. We're usually 20 to 25 under during harvest, and then it starts bouncing pretty quickly after harvest is over. So by this time of year, normally we'd be 10 under, but this year we're 2 or 3 under.
And should producers take advantage of that?
Corn was under $5 back in September, and we're now approaching $6. So I like to remind producers to keep that in mind. We have had an 85-cent rally in corn prices just over the last couple of months. But just like everybody else, I do think there's still some more upside in corn. I have not been willing to pull the trigger on new crop corn yet. We're paying 5.25. Most years we would say, sign me up. But with the higher input costs and with the unknowns and inflation and everything else, I guess I'm waiting for 5.50 before I start selling new crop corn. And old crop corn, I know everybody wants $6 and cash prices are around 5.80, but I think we can see 5.95, maybe $6. So I guess we're getting close to where I want to start seeing farmers sell corn, but we're not there yet. I think there's probably just a little bit more upside before I really want to encourage farmers to start really getting aggressive on selling corn.
I think the plan would be, you know, we got to look at some really good profits. If you have a decent yield and at these price levels, it's significant profit for this year. But again, the idea of when you would do that, when you want to let it go, take advantage of the basis. But I really think there's a need out there to go back into the corn market if you're going to sell it and offset that risk, have a known cost, wait and see what happens, because there's a lot of unknowns this year, probably most we've had in quite a few years as to what's going to happen to production, what's going to happen to acres, what's our cost going to be. So you throw all that together, it just says be flexible, but you want to kind of pick and choose and take advantage of opportunities that market's been giving us here in the last 60, 80 days.
Given the Southern Hemisphere brings a crop out, soybean that is, 6 months after the United States does, and the export market is likely to close up in January, certainly in February, for U.S. soybeans, do you have a different scenario that you're thinking about for soybeans, Chuck, and what they should do if they've got anything left to sell?
The soybeans have been an interesting market ever since we raised the carry out there, and then we lowered the yield some. It looked like the bean market was going to be in some serious trouble, but it's turned around. It's trading in a range. Upper end is near, you know, $13. We've been back and forth. We've seen some exports pick up. I think the bean market, one of the positives there is inflation. The soybean market, I don't think is going to crash and burn if we're going to have inflation in most everything else out there. Biodiesel in the long run, I think is a real positive. Some of the western states are going to eliminate diesel fuel and require it be replaced with a vegetable oil or oil. So I like the idea of taking advantage of beans $12.75 to $13 on the board. Again, taking advantage of that. If South America comes in with a big crop, that'll be a negative. And again, looking at some risk moving over to some kind of option strategy and taking advantage of a good price.
Greg Ginder, soybeans are really dependent. Some 60% of them go out of the ports from the United States for export. What is your thought process as it relates to pricing them out?
Well, I think what you said about it, basically the window closing in February is very accurate with what we've seen in Brazil so far and in the South American countries. It looks like they will have a pretty good crop, barring anything unusual happening until, you know, Feb-March from here on out. I think it will stay strong. I think the Chinese demand will stay there. It they'll just do average business, and it'll depend on the futures as well. I mean, at that $12, once we got down there, we did a whole lot of business at $12 beans. So that makes me feel like there's some pretty good support down there. But as far as after what happens after February and March, it's kind of anybody's guess, to be quite honest with you. I think it will be a good interior market with soybean meal and bean oil being strong, but it may shift out of the exports into the interior.
And Greg Johnson?
I think the fundamentals are a little bit different for soybeans than they are for corn. Projected carryout, even with a good corn crop, unless you use 96 million acres, which I guess I'll take the under on for planted acres next spring, feels to me like corn carryout could be 1.2, 1.4 billion, and that's assuming we have no weather issues. So I don't think corn's in any risk of selling off anytime soon. On beans, on the other hand, if we do see more bean acres, the potential for beans to be sub $11, I think, is there by next fall. I'm not saying we're going there in the next 3 months, but let's say late January, early February, South America sets pods and fills pods in decent shape, and then we are going to plant more acres ourselves, and we know South America planted more acres. It's just hard for me fundamentally to see beans closer to 13 than 11. So we're in the 12-30-ish range right now. I think that's a great place to make your first 20% of your sales. If we get to 12.50, sell another 25%. 12.75, sell another 25%. And, you know, if we do get to $13, that's when we can look at the, probably using some kind of an option strategy to lock in a floor at those higher prices. But to me, the fundamentals are just a little bit more bearish on soybeans, assuming that we grow a normal crop. If you're not selling 12.50 beans, that tells me you're betting on weather problems somewhere. And that may happen, but the odds would say, if we have a normal crop, beans should be closer to 11 than 13 next fall.
Well, Chuck Shelby, in the University of Illinois' numbers that we've already talked about, there was a crop budget too, that Gary Schnittke put together, showed that there wasn't much of a difference in corn or soybeans, but also showed that there wasn't profit really in either one. What have you done with those numbers on your own farm? What do they look like? What are they telling you if things don't change for the 2022-23 crop year?
Well, really, when you look out there, the what you have to have in these budgets is you have to have a really good yield. And we always start that idea out as producers that we're going to grow a really good crop. So the dilemma comes into the situation is if we have any kind of weather problems, and I'm just talking about maybe in parts of Indiana or Ohio or Illinois, and your yield's not there, then your budget doesn't look so good, and you can end up having a very small profit or maybe no profit at all. So it's uncomfortable, I guess, going into a growing season knowing you can make money, but you're going to have to hit a really good yield to make that happen.
One of the things I will point out at this point is that there is an in-rate calculator for Minnesota, Wisconsin, Nebraska, Illinois, Michigan, Indiana, and Ohio that folks can take a look at. It's operated by Iowa State, but the numbers that are behind that data come from each of those land-grant universities in those states, and it defines the maximum rate to in and most profitable in rates. So it is possible to lower the nitrogen rate, and the higher price the fertilizer in or nitrogen is, The lower you can come down but still make money on it, or at least find a maximum amount so you can lower the amount of in applied. It might give you some better idea of what kinds of ranges you could look at for applications. It's easy enough to find. It's at in-rate calculator when you search. Just look for in-rate calculator and you'll find it at Iowa State. That's pretty easy to see as well, iowastate.edu. And you can put your own numbers in, including what the cost of nitrogen is. So it's pretty simple and easy to use. I think farmers might be thinking, Chuck, that if they lower their nitrogen rates, that national yield and total production will come down. I don't think that Emerson Napsinger at the U of I or anybody who put the numbers behind this would say that just yet. And maybe at the high price of nitrogen we have now, maybe, I guess. I don't know. What do you think?
I think it all depends on the weather. If you have good weather and you don't get any excessive rain, or if you're implying you're anhydrous in the fall, you know, if the situation turns out good and you don't lose any nitrogen along the way, then you can probably do that and works out fine. But one point I'd like to make about a budget is when you plant a corn crop, it takes a lot more money. Whether you borrow money or you have the money, you're risking a lot more dollars. So to me, that's another attraction to soybeans. It's a lot less money on the table when you're talking about the risk of not making that big yield. So I think there's a money issue and a cash flow issue when you talk about putting out a corn crop and the amount of dollars it's going to take compared to putting out a bean crop.
So if you change, Chuck, your rotation to include more soybean acres because of a money issue, are you going ahead and marketing that portion of the crop that has changed?
I think so. I think you have to be pretty cautious on soybeans. I think the acres will be big there. So taking advantage of that, if you're going to go that way, I really like selling your soybean crop of 2022 and getting the floor underneath there in some method is really important to me as far as your marketing plan for 22.
Any additional thoughts from either Greg? And I'll start with you, Greg Johnson.
I guess I agree with Chuck. I mean, the fundamentals would suggest, and Daryl Good always said too, if you're going to plant more beans, you need to market more beans. You know, don't just plant more and then not sell them, because if everybody changes their opinion and does plant more beans, all of a sudden we have more beans and then the price isn't there. So if you're going to plant more beans, make sure you get those beans sold, would be my opinion.
Yeah, Daryl always said if you make a decision based on price, then make a market move based on that same decision. And finally, Greg Ginder, anything to add in this part of the conversation before I get a final word from each of you? And if you just want to go to your final word, that's fine as well.
Just real quick for my final word, I would just say that we haven't talked a whole lot about wheat, but these commodity markets have a tendency to have sympathy for one another and maybe not necessarily follow each trend step for step, but they do have a tendency to affect one another. One of the things that we're seeing in the wheat market right now is a trend that looks like we will be seeing some lower prices, you know, maybe making a move back to $7. So what I'm struggling with is trying to figure out how that will affect corn and beans in relationship to just prices. A lot of these rallies we've been on have been on outside money, and generally they hold long positions in all three. So I think it will definitely put maybe a short-term lid on any rallies that we see in corn and beans. So that's something just to keep in mind.
Greg Johnson, your final word for the day?
There are a lot of unknowns in this marketplace, more so than most years. We've got input costs. We've got inflation. We've got South American weather. We've got politics as far as, you know, biodiesel is concerned. So with all these unknowns, it's pretty unlikely that this market's going to sell off until we have some of these questions answered. So, you know, you don't have to rush right out and sell today, but the fundamentals would suggest, especially in soybeans, that anything with a 12 in front of it probably will look pretty good when it's all said and done.
And finally, Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities.
I think we have to consider outside our own area at this point in time what's going to impact us the most. I really think the western states are the driving factor to what acres are going to be. And as we move into 2022 as producers. There's a lot of homework we need to do, a lot of thoughts that need to be made, and a lot of decisions. So it's going to be a challenging year in 22.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, Greg Ginder of lakefrontfutures.com out of Hopkinsville, Kentucky, Greg Johnson of totalgrainmarketing.com in Champaign, Illinois, and Chuck Shelby of rmcommodities.com. That's Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.